were traveling in the middle of the day, mm-hmm. unless it was fruit or ice cream or something like that.
Yeah, we'll usually in the middle of the afternoon sort of take a break so we don't get too hungry, but otherwise we don't. That we had we found a good breakfast place there. Well, so what was your first impression when you, had you ever been, how far west in North Carolina had you been, and what was your first impression when you got here?
I had never been farther than Asheville, and not to Asheville more than twice in my life. Chimney Rock I had been to, because when we had guests down home, we'd bring them to Chimney Rock, because that was an exciting place to bring them. And so I'd never been farther west than Asheville. Mm-hmm. And I came alone on November the 18th in 1941 across the mountains that you crossed this morning. When I got to that lookout that you noticed up there, mm-hmm. I drove out and I looked across in November. There, we had had plenty of frosts that year in November. It was cold as the dickens. And I looked out across there and I said to myself, if I thought they'd take me back in Roxborough, I'd turn around and go back right now. I did. It was the most bleak looking situation I've ever seen in my life. And so I came on in. There were 1,500 extra people in Hayesville. And we only had a total of 600 to begin with. 1,500 extra people, workers on the dam and on the roads and all, you know, to clear up and get rid of the everything and make it a finished product. Mm-hmm. Chattoogee Dam. And Chattoogee is Indian for the meeting of the waters. Oh. It's where Shooting Creek met the Hiawassee River. Oh. It's where the dam was built. Well, I came on in and I went to the only place I had been told that would take guests. And they had no rooms. And I called the Mrs. Waldrop, who had told Mr. Schaffner. He knew about what the situation was, so he had contacted a woman whom he had talked with because of the home demonstration agent. It was Edith Barrier, and she was a darn good agent. And so she knew about Ms. Waldrop. And so he had told me if I couldn't get a room to call Ms. Waldrop and ask her if I could come out to her house. She told me I could. And I went out to her house, which is about 3 miles out on 69, where you went this morning. And I think, I'm pretty sure I had supper. She was a good cook. Had a big stove in the kitchen, which was fired by a wood stove, you know. And her house was comfortable, fireplaces. And I sat at that fireplace that night while the fire went out. And I didn't know. I mean, I don't remember that I had any feeling. I was kind of numb because I was so surprised by everything being. It wasn't that I was accustomed to so much, but for the last 16 years, I'd lived in Greensboro. And I had had steam heat and all the comforts of home, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that I expected so much. It was just that I was just numb. Mm-hmm. That's the only way I can explain it. Well, I went to bed in a room which had never had any heat in it at all. Fortunately, my mother had knit some bed socks, wool bed socks. I put them on. I had Bal Briggin pajamas. I know you probably don't remember Bal Briggins, but they were real tight fitting and wonderfully they fit your body. And I had been wearing Bal Briggins for a number of years in the wintertime. I had a little sweater that Mama had knit me, and I put that on over my Bal Briggin pajamas and got into bed. And between cold sheets, I felt like I was going to freeze. So I got up and put on my wool bathrobe over the pajamas and the little sweater. Mm-hmm. and my feet felt pretty good in those wool socks. Well, I got to sleep, and I slept good, really. Got up the next morning, and it was cold when I put my nose out. Cold as the dickens. So I ran into the kitchen with my clothes in my hand, and I said, "Ms. Waldrop, I'm going to get behind your stove to put my clothes on." She said, "Well, if you'll hurry, maybe you can get dressed before Mr. Waldrop gets back from milking." I said, "I can't help if he comes in before I get him on. I am cold." And she knew I was. Well, I had a wool suit. That's what I had worn because I knew it was cold. And so I did get dressed. And they were wonderful to me, Mr. and Ms. Otto Waldrop. And I only lived out there about, I guess I stayed out there about a month. On weekends, I would go over and go to the hotel. And I'd get a good bath and get warmed up and all that and feel a little different. But let me tell you, I hadn't been here. You see, that was November the 18th. On December the 7th, which wasn't very long, you see, C.D. Thomas came by to take me to Knoxville. And we were listening to what was happening on December the 6th that he came by. And we were listening to what was happening on the radio. Well, we went to Asheville first and picked up somebody, I don't remember who it was, and then went on to Knoxville. And on December the 7th, I sat in Dr. Harcourt Morgan's office, along with a half a dozen other men, listening to war being declared. And it was a terrible, terrible feeling that I had. Because you see, when I was a little girl, World War I transpired, and I had three brothers who enlisted. And I saw what it did to my mother and father, and I made up my mind then that I never wanted to have any children. People have a difficult time believing that, because they say a child couldn't have. I did decide that. I didn't want anybody ever that I loved to go back into war. I wrote to my brothers almost every day. I didn't send it but once a week. But I'd write to them and tell them what had happened and how I felt. But fortunately, all three of them came back. The oldest boy was in headquarters division because he knew how to push a pencil. The second one was the secretary to a commandant on a minesweeper. He knew how to push a pencil. And he'd write Mama and say, "Now, there's just no danger where I am." And she'd say, "I wonder if Urban thinks I'm a dumb somebody. A minesweeper? All he has to do is hit a mine?" Well, the third one, Bill, Papa had to sign for him because he was only 17. And Papa had to sign for him. And I was 10, you see, and Bill was 17. And he was on a transport, so all he did was go back and forth, and that ship could have been torpedoed just any time. But fortunately, all three of them came back, and I was thankful for that. But that's one experience that I'll never forget. And when people talk about going to see a movie about a war, don't ask me. I don't ever intend to. I don't plan to look at that Ryan thing. It was advertised so highly. Last night they were talking about it and how wonderful it was. Well, it may be wonderful for some people, but not for me. Joe Beam, my nephew, insists that I look at those pictures of the Civil War. Not me. I can't do it. I told him. I said, "Joe, I just can't do it." Well, he even sent me a video thinking that I would look at it. I haven't looked at it. It's over there, but I just can't do it. War to me is, it's just so useless in the first place. And it's so horrible. And the things that I read and the things that people say who have been in the war, Ernie Powell used to write about it, you know, so graphically. You don't remember him because you
weren't
even
born. I know the name.
But anyway,
So you, were you actually working for TVA at this point?
I was working for the North Carolina Cooperative Extension Service, cooperating with TVA, and they were paying my salary. But they told me not to tell anybody here that TVA was paying my salary because people here hated TVA's guts.
Why was that?
Because they took their best land, the bottom land. It was covered with water. And they took it. Of course, they gave them a good price for it in those days. But now the lots around the lake are selling for $10,000 to $30,000 a piece. And some of them more than that. Unbelievable. I could have bought a lot for $1,500 that a man offered the owner $1 million for about 5 years ago. And he was an old farmer, and he said, it's worth $1 million to you, it's worth $1 million to me. Huh. I'm not selling it. And his wife still owns it. I don't know what, she doesn't have any children. I don't know what's going to happen to that. But I could have bought it and thought about it. I called my friend in Greensboro and asked her if she could rake up $750, because I could, you know. Well, she said she couldn't, and I didn't ask my brother. He was a banker, and he would have loaned it to me. But I didn't ask him, and I should have, but I didn't. So I'm just barely getting by on a pension, which is all right with me. Just so I have food, clothing, and shelter, what else do I need?
Right.
Well, anyway.
So can you just sort of set the scene for TVA and what had...
Well, TVA had a group of men who were their agricultural department. And they worked very closely with us. One of them was here practically every week to do and to train us, you see. The land was so depleted that they were making 25 bushels of corn per acre. So the purpose for the agronomist was to get the land in production. And that meant lime, phosphate, and legumes. Well, ASCS helped to get the lime very inexpensively. TVA gave them the phosphate for 64 cents a bag, which was just giveaway, actually. They just, that was a token, really, 64 cents for that. It was 64% phosphate. And all we had to do was to get them to leave a check plot to show what would happen if they put lime and phosphate on pasture land. And it only took 1 year to convince them. Of course, to begin with, the farmers were skeptical. Mountaineers are skeptical. And they let you know right quick that you've got to prove something to them. Well, we let them prove it to themselves. Well, it was my job to help do that, because if the land didn't produce, they had nothing to spend for a house or for anything to go in home. And so all I could do was, somebody said to me, this woman who is very witty said one day, this was much later, she said, you know, your assistant agents can do everything, and I don't think you can do anything except talk. And I said, well, I've done pretty good at that, haven't I? But what I did was to convince men about what was needed at their particular area. And the first thing, of course, was electricity. Well, we had no right to work up electric lines. That was the job of the electric company, BREA. Blue Ridge Electric Association. That was their job. But Brian Collins, who was liaison between TVA and Extension Service, said, if the people want you to do something, you're working for the people of Clay County. If Raleigh says anything about it, I'm the one that you tell about it, because the buck stops with me. He took the licks. So we worked up electric lines, the very first thing, all over the county. And the four of us, it didn't take long to do it, because everybody wanted electricity. And do you know, it was only about 0.75 per kilowatt in those days. Now it's much more, of course, but In those days, it was just nothing. People could heat with electricity. Mm-hmm. When I built my little house in the year 44 and 45, I put electric heaters mm-hmm. in it. It was just wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it was so clean, you see, and all that. But, of course, they can't afford to heat with it now. I mean, heat all over. Mm-hmm. The motors are run by electricity. Mm-hmm. But we got electricity all over Clay County.
So did you go out helping to organize, get customers for the co-op, or how did you go about
it? Well, the thing that we did, it wasn't exactly a co-op. We had each neighborhood, not community now, but each neighborhood organized. People didn't have any transportation. When you talked about going to a meeting, you had to walk. So we had to organize by neighborhoods, and that was the way we managed mm-hmm. it. I tell you, Bryce Ratchford was the economist with the North Carolina Extension Service, and it was his idea. What we did was this. We had been here long enough to see how people were progressing and getting along. He suggested that we look at the people who had 5 acres or less of cropland. People who had from 5 to 10, from 10 to 20, and 20 and above. That's 4 groups of people. So we did. He suggested that we take at least 3 of each, 3 or 4 people from each of those, let them make the plan of what they have done and where they want to be 5 years from now, and so on right down the line with each one of them. Well, we had few in this group and few in this group.
The highest and the lowest.
The highest and the lowest. But we had a lot of people here. Mm-hmm. And so that's the way we were organized, you see. And it was such a small county that the neighborhoods, we could meet in neighborhoods. We have met in homes with a lamp on the floor and studied a map, for example, that we, Mr. Vick and I, he was a polterman. Well, after 6 years, we had about 144 poultry farms, because the women had done the poultry previous to this, but now that it was getting some money, the men got interested in it, so they got into poultry farms, and we had poultry men coming from the outside and people who wanted to sell poultry food, feed, and all that sort of thing. We had more help than we could manage. People coming from from the Agriculture Department of TVA and our extension specialists. We had people in here all the time helping us. Mm-hmm. And we had 22 grade A dairies. Mm-hmm. And we had practically every farm using lime and phosphate. Mm-hmm. Every farm that was doing any farming at all. Mm-hmm. So you see, and then we had electricity in the homes. We were beginning to get that sort of thing. People had either built houses or they had found one to move to. And so we were getting organized to that extent, mm-hmm. you see. After 6 years, now these are census figures, not ours, but census figures, the corn production per acre on the average was 125 bushels.
Wow.
In a 6 year period. And with you see, that was unbelievable. And the number of homes that had electricity and had been improved were almost, it was almost total. And of course there were, I was not doing a home demonstration then. I was just extra. They called me an associate county agent. that was my title. I didn't have any title. They had no title for me. And so I was just extra. But I wrote a column for the newspaper called The Roving Reporter. And every week I wrote up people who were doing something. Uh-huh. And we had special programs countywide bringing people in, and we planned to get them in some way.
Was this the Hayesville newspaper that you were writing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was called, I've forgotten what it was called in those days, but now it's called the Clay County Progress. Mm-hmm. And I still write. Mm-hmm. It comes out tomorrow, mm-hmm. Thursdays. But I was going to tell you that, let me see, in 41, 47, 48, I guess it was 1949, they wanted to give Mr. Vick and me the, I've forgotten what it was called, but it was the thing that we'd reached the best in North Carolina, you know, that sort of thing. And you know what we decided? We got together and we decided that we'd tell them that if they would come to Clay County to present it, we would accept it. Now, wasn't that egotistical? We were to go to Washington to receive it. Well, we'd been to Washington a half a dozen times to tell about Clay County. I had been to Ames, Iowa, and talked to the Extension Service, complete Extension Service of Iowa, and told them about Clay County. I'd been to Lafayette, Indiana, and done the same thing. To Columbus, Ohio. Vic and I both went to Columbus, Ohio. We flew up there. And when we started from Chattanooga, we had to come back. After we got up in the air, we had to come back because they discovered that we had a flat tire. Flat tire on an airplane. And when we got back down, Vic said, "Velma, let's go home. Let's just get off and go home." And I said, "No, we're going because we promised Dr. Rashford to be there today." And so we did go, and we did make it safely. But that was an experience I'll never forget. But we had done all these things, you see. So we were smarty pants, and we said, this was Dr. Weaver at that time. We said, "Dr. Weaver, we think the people of Clay County deserve this honor. We don't deserve it. They've done it. And we think if you all will come to Hayesville and present it, it will be more effective." Well, they came, and we had the thing in the old courthouse, and it still has those awful steps that you have to go up, you know. But everybody came all over the county, uh-huh. And we had dinner over there, and it was a good dinner. The women brought fried chicken and all that good stuff, uh-huh. You know, they always bring in. Uh-huh. Well, we had a wonderful day. And I wish we had preserved those pictures. I did have them in the office. Uh-huh. But one of the gals that followed in my footsteps decided to clean up one day, and she burned all
those. Oh, my gosh. Oh. Don't tell me about that.
That's right. That's right. It was burned, and I asked the secretary, I said, "Doris, you ought to have told her she can't burn those things." She said, "Velma, you don't tell that woman anything." Well, I'll tell you why. She was in the Federal Extension Service. She needed to work 2 more years, so she asked for Clay County, because I had retired, you see. J. Walter and I that's another story.
Okay.
But anyway, We think that Clay County was recognized because, as I said, in all of those states, the Extension Service heard about it. I know when I was going to Ames, I looked at, J. Walter went with me to Ames, because he paid his own way and they paid mine. But anyway, we were riding through that country on the train and looked out across those vast expanses of land. Mm-hmm. And I said, imagine me going from a little county that didn't have more than, very few farms had 20 acres of cropland, going out there where they have 4,000 and 5,000 mm-hmm. acres of cropland, mm-hmm. telling them about Clay County. But I think actually what impressed people most was not what was accomplished materially, but what it did for people spiritually, spiritually, not meaning what the fundamentalists mean by us, but their very spirits were raised, and there was a different atmosphere. And you know, people will call me to this day, some of them still living. You know, I buried nearly everybody that was a fairly grown-up person when I first came here. I've been here 56 years.
Uh-huh.
When you see, if they were 20 years old when I came, they'd be 76. And a lot of people don't even live to be 76. Mm-hmm. So I have outlived almost everybody. Mm-hmm. But anybody who is still here, that was here in the beginning, they'll go back and talk about what it was like, mm-hmm. and what it was like to become productive.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a difference in a person's whole being. If you're doing something that's really showing worthwhile results,
mm-hmm.
then you just are different.
Mm-hmm.
You just have an enthusiasm that is catchy.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
contagious,
mm-hmm.
no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what happened.
Mm-hmm.
If you're enthusiastic, well, you're like that. If you teach history, you can be feeling real enthusiastic, and your children will be
mm-hmm.
enthusiastic
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
I did that in school plenty of times. And if I was down in the mouth, I just ought to have gone home and gone to bed instead of teaching. I mean, that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You do just as much good.
Well, what happened to those people who were displaced by TVA? Was that something, people whose farms had been bought up, and then when the dam was built, their farms were covered with water?
They had to move and get a place somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
But
was that part of your job to help them?
That was part of my job,
uh-huh.
help them to get located.
Mm-hmm.
The girl who helps me once a week, she'll be here tomorrow, her parents had to move out of the damn area, and she's living in the house in which they moved to, which I helped to draw the plans for.
Mm-hmm.
And she says it's still one of the most convenient houses she's ever lived in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on old 64, just 3 or 4 miles out in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And she's living in that house, for example. And some people move their houses out of the damn area,
mm-hmm.
and we help to get them located.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just a jack of all trades. I helped with everything.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was a program to be had, I was there, you know. I know, I remember once I didn't get to go to some kind of a program, and I told the school teacher, I said, "Mary, I'm sorry I didn't make that program last night." She said, "Well, I want you to know we got along fine without you. We can have one program without you for one time." She meant it too, that she wasn't just kidding. But I laughed about it. I thought it was funny. You know, I had a first cousin one time who told me I didn't have sense enough to know when people were sitting all over me. But I don't see any point in having an attitude of, you know, you're talking about me. I just pretend I don't know it. And that's a heap easier. Oh, man. I have talked so much, I've got to wipe my mouth.